श्रीला गुरुदेव की जय, श्रीमन महाप्रभु की जय, श्री हरि नाम संकीर्तन की जय, श्री श्री गौर नित्यानंद की जय, श्री गौर गदाधर की जय, श्री श्री लवजी गोपाल की जय, श्री राधा गौर गाद माधव की जय, गौर भक्त वृंद की जय, गौर प्रेमानंद हरि हरि वो। So, good morning to all. Welcome. Thanks so much for your presence here today again, one more day in the eternal time of Madhuban. And we are continuing with our series of lectures on Srinam, part of our Japa retreat in-depth seminar about actualizing our connection with Harinam Prabhu, upgrading our relationship with the Holy Name. So, before going to today's topic, I'll make a very brief recap of what we saw our last class, which was 2 days ago. Since yesterday we have a class by our Guru Maharaj and Vandanam prayer. 2 days ago, if you may recall, we spoke a little bit about the glorious ontology of Srinam Prabhu. We spent some time in going in detail into what we call Nam Sambandha. What is what in relation to the name? Who is the name? What is the name? What's the conceptual orientation behind the name of God? Very important, so we know not what we are dealing with, but who. in our abhidhaya, in our practice, and that will in turn affect our prayojan, or the final fruit that we hope to attain. So we try to share some ideas in that regard, how not so much the name is something we are putting in our mouth, if you will, but something that we are inside of it. Everything is inside the name. The name is not different from Krishna, and all of Krishna's Shaktis are with him, and we are one of his Shaktis, and the name is Krishna. It's important to turn the point from us being the main subject and the name being an object. But no, the name is Krishna himself, and I am one Shakti of that name. No, I am one Shakti of the name. No, that's a good way of putting that. So this name, as simple as it may be, but as necessary as may be also to repeat, is Abhinna Swarup, or the non-different representation of Bhagavan, as we mentioned. Non-different. So we have to develop proper faith, Shraddha, if the name is not different from God, and God can perform miracles, I need a miracle. The name is not different from Krishna, so the name can perform the necessary miracle I need to become. I have the potential to become a miracle. But I have to have faith in that, of course. And the faith is not just like some sentimental mental conviction, but something really grounded and rooted in revelation. And so many examples in history are there of people who have attained all their most brilliant potential by taking shelter in divine sound. So somehow we have to address the chanting with faith in what we are doing, because as Krishna says in the Gita, if you don't have faith in what you are doing, that won't produce any effect, basically. You yourself do not believe what you yourself are doing. So first you have to be sure, how much faith do I have? And having faith is not just having or not having. But there are so many shades of having. Not having is not having, but having so many shades of that. So we may have, of course, on one degree, some faith. That's why we are doing that, hopefully. But it can also grow, increase through experience, as we mentioned, through proper approach. We will have proper experience, and that will in turn nourish proper faith, so we continue practicing with more faith, and the more faith, practice with more faith gives a deeper result, and that deeper result nourishes the faith, and that faith takes, so that's like a circle that will continually grow and grow, like spiral dynamics. So again, the name is Chintamani, as we mentioned, is a touchstone, so be careful with Chintamani, because it can give whatever you want, whatever you're thinking, whatever you're asking for, so we have to be very... That's a great blessing, but it's a great responsibility also. I'm dealing with something very delicate, very, very powerful. Again, something that is non-different from God, Or even if you want to put it even higher, the name is more powerful than God, more generous than God. And we gave the example, it's more generous because it's more fortunate. And we gave this example of Krishna drawing his name on the feet of Sri Radha and saying, oh, I cannot remain there forever, but my name can. My name is so fortunate. I like to have the fortune of my name. So name is more fortunate and therefore can be more generous because it's sharing higher fortune than that of God himself. You can imagine this. So it's God himself, but if you want to make a difference, there's a little bit more there in the name. So there's so much in the name. Try to think about that till all your functions collapse, because the thinking capacities are kind of go too far, but you have to use them, push them to the limit. So, because if we are lazy in that sense, we are not honoring properly the fact that we have some buddhi and some faculties over there. So as Guru Maharaj likes to say, use your head to soften your heart. So think as much as you can, but in such a way that it concludes, converges in some moving epiphany, some conclusion, So also some point that we made in connection to Krishna being non-different from his name is that Krishna is already in the call. We are calling Krishna, but he's already there. Of course, the fact that he's already there doesn't mean that we don't have to invoke the name. He's in the name, but if we don't chant the name, he's not, if you will, there. We need to call the name, to invoke the name, to call him, and he's already there immediately. But the real question then is not so much, as we said, where he is, but where we are when calling him. Especially when not finding him present, not feeling the presence of the divine, well, while invoking the name, while invoking the divine in his most present form. So we don't feel the divine in his most present form, then where are we present now? Are we in the present? Are we present in the present? Or we are absent in the past, future, who knows in which mind trip? Mind likes to go shopping here and there. So probably we have gone shopping. And Krishna is here, I'm here, and you put the sign, gone shopping. So we need to refine that and become proper hosts, Atithi Seva, as we mentioned. Well, I have to treat an unexpected guest as God himself. What if God himself is the guest? We have to be proper. Develop our hosting capacity. How much capacity do you have to host the Absolute in our lives? How to treat, again, chanting, as we mentioned, is developing a relationship, establishing a relationship or being aware, becoming aware of the intrinsic connection we have with God as our source. On one level or another, we are part and parcels of him, one of his energies, so we cannot be disconnected from our source, even as we may like to think that is that's the case. So chanting becomes acknowledging that connection and developing that connection. It's not just chanting. Again, it's developing a relationship. So you can think about all the things that any relationship requires to be developed. So you have to invest all the things and more in this relationship because it's the most important relationship we have with God. So we cannot just treat it as a non-priority, secondary type of connection, but it's the most important one on which all my other relationships depend. So it's the root relationship. So as any relationship, if you want to grow in that relationship, you have to spend attention, you have to spend quality time with that person. It's like if I'm a parent and I have kids, but I don't spend quality time with them. And they are playing, I'm sitting here checking my social media, and they're like, and they're killing themselves, and I'm just like, okay, nice, yeah. And they're like, daddy, don't disturb now. So that's not quality time. I'm there, but I'm not there. So the quality time means I'm there, I'm looking at you, listening at you, speaking with you, investing my time, my life, in you and vice versa. So this applies with the name, trying to be present in the presence of the name. We'll speak a little bit more today about that. Somehow all these points that we mentioned last class will be unfolded during all the remaining classes. So, and on top of that, we spoke, after speaking about the name of God, we enter into a more detail about the name of Krishna and the specialty of the name of Krishna for us in this particular age, and so on. So that's a not so brief recap. I hope your homework has been going well. I'm not doing any scanning nor entering anyone's room and checking the notebooks, but I'm having implicit unconditional faith in my co-workers here in the seminar. And of course, apart from that, our Guru Maharaj gave a very nice lecture yesterday on the topic of Vandanam, on prayers in connection to some verses of the Bhagavatam and so on. And we will continue elaborate further, not today, nor maybe tomorrow, maybe the day after tomorrow. Something more about the concept of prayer. Not only as offering prayers, but as he mentioned at the very end, chanting prayerfully, no? And the spirit of prayer in the chanting, if you want to put it like that. So, that's it. We have this recap, and the holy name is so glorious, so incredible, so everything and more. But of course, the question that may come is, not then won't happen in this case, by Snigdha Kanta, but why sometimes it's difficult for me to experience that? Well, if this is such a gem, such a touchstone, such a everything, and everything is there, why I'm not always receiving that? So today we will try to speak about that, why we don't fully experience those things that we know are true, are there, and that we have had a glimpse of, but somehow the glimpse, it's a glimpse yet, no? So what to do? Why? No? So we will try to speak today about detecting the main obstacles to our chanting. Not to concentrate on a negative direction, but just like, unless you are aware that there are obstacles, you cannot even work on them, what to speak of transcending them, because you are not detecting them. So first we need to acknowledge, ascertain which mindsets may represent as some type of distancing feature from the absolute, and after acknowledging them, we can work on them, and after working on them, we can transcend them, if you will, or transform them in a best version of themselves, if you will. No? Because as we always speak, obstacles can be also used, taken advantage of, and you can deal with them in such a way that they are no longer obstacles. It's just about redefining and recalibrating our approach to everything. So, some brainstorming from your side. What can you think of if we speak of obstacles to our chanting? What comes to your mind? What's the first obstacle coming to your mind?
Focus. The lack of focus.
Okay. Focus is not an obstacle. Thank God. Lack of focus. Mm-hmm. What else? Something else? Let's share ideas. No.
Offending devotees.
I will leave for tomorrow's class. It will be detailed study of Nama Parat, including that one. What else?
Thinking about all of the to-do they have to do.
Okay, all the to-do list of the day. Laundry and shopping, the shopping list. Mind shopping list, which is not only... Yeah. What else? Something else comes to mind?
Ideas coming to your mind exactly when you turn.
using the beads.
Sorry?
Using the beads.
What do you mean by using the beads?
Like, I can chant constantly. If I know what the purpose of
Okay. Oh, okay. We'll speak about that. Yeah. Okay, so let's try to somehow summarize some of the things you mentioned and some other things, and try to unfold some possible. Again, I will mention some things. You may feel this is not so much an obstacle for me as it may be for others, but let's kind of summarize some. Few of them, and we will. I mentioned them briefly, and then we will try to, unpack each of them. So one of them already, maybe addressed in our previous lecture, was to have a material conception of the name when chanting it. again, lack of sambandha, lack of proper understanding and appreciation, what's the name? Mahaprabhu, interestingly, in the second verse of Sikshastaka, of course, in the last line, he expresses some repentance. I'm so unfortunate, I don't have attachment for them. But first, he expresses three lines of appreciation. Oh, your names are so many, all Shaktis are there, all mercy, no hard and fast rules. So first, there is proper conception of the name and appreciation of that, and then, as we will see, proper repentance. But three lines of appreciation, one line of repentance. That's a good dose. So that will be one, to have material conception of the name. Then also another one, which are other ways of saying what you also mentioned, impatience. Impatience, you say? No? To be impatient while chanting. For whatever reason, we will explore that. Another one is absorption in mundane thoughts, which will maybe connection of the shopping list or whatever, no? Or with thoughts that have nothing to do with the chanting in itself, no? Of course, in the different, there are different stages of chanting. In the beginning, you may be chanting, and your mind will go to something really mundane. And maybe in time, as we will see, your citta will be purified by bhakti samskars, devotional impressions. And instead of getting distracted with really mundane things, you get distracted with other services you have to do during the day. So it's not so mundane, but still, you shouldn't be thinking about that at that moment. But at least you are getting closer to a devotional distraction, if you want to find that. And after that, eventually, you will be less and less distracted. No? That we will see, that's how it works. No? So that's also connected with impatience. Be patient, it's gradually getting closer. No? Another possible obstacle could be, some of them may be more subtle than others. No? Another one will be having the ego of being the chanter of the name. No? To take the chanting as mostly egotistic performance, if you want to put it like that. Another one could be, and we will see some of them do not only apply to the moment we are sitting for chanting, but how we conduct ourselves in our lifestyle. As our Guru Maharaj likes to say, you have your sitting, but then you have your walking. No? You sit for chanting, and then you wake up, and you walk. And in the fact, you do other things in your life, and then you sit back. And Arjuna asked about that to Krishna also in the Gita. How does the sage sit? How does he walk? No? So how do you behave when you are chanting, but how do you walk the talk? Or walk the sitting? walk the chanting. So another obstacle in this connection may be superficiality, complacency. Again, not necessarily during the chanting or also, but during your lifestyle. How do you conduct yourself in life? How do you relate with reality? Another one may be indifference to the chanting or to what's required for better chanting. Emotional disconnection from Srinam. We will see what that may mean. I mean, maybe you already started to have some thoughts about that. And maybe we will conclude with one more that could be termed basically as impersonalism. And you may say, but Maharaj, we are Gaudiya Vaishnavas. We are every single day smashing Mayavad. Well, we may have to detect some Mayavad still lingering in our own veins, if you will, and smash that one first. So again, some of them, or maybe most of them, somehow we have mentioned them in the previous class here and there without maybe pointing to them in this way. And in seed form, we have mentioned how to deal with some of these things. But today, and I would say in the next lectures, we will gradually unpack the implications of some of these points. Again, not only speaking about which are the obstacles and what not to do, but hopefully always converging in a positive take to the whole thing. What to do, how to deal with this in a positive devotional way. So let's begin with the first one, which was having a material conception of the name. Which again, mostly this was addressed in our previous lecture when we tried to give the proper conception of the name. What's the name? As my Guru Maharaj likes to say, what's in a name? And in this case, who is the name? So we try to give lots of information, if you will, conceptual orientation, education, what's Srinam? Raghunath Das Goswami is saying, we even are not chanting Nam, like abstract Nam, but Nam Shrestham. It's a Pranam mantra he offers to Sri Guru. Nam Shrestham Manumapi Satchiput. Nam Shrestham means the highest conception of the name. So of course, in order not to have a material conception of the name, well, you are receiving the highest conception of the name, which, as we mentioned, helps you to realize, oh, this is, the name is not different from Krishna, and even he's, in one sense, above Bhagavan himself. That's the highest conception of the name, and everything is included within it. Mm-hmm. So having proper conception, having this Nam Sambandha, will protect us from this particular obstacle, from conceiving the name as something material, from expecting something material through the chanting of the name. That's another way of seeing the name in material terms. Like, you may be, oh, yes, you are a super spiritual person, but please provide me all these material things that I would like. And ideally, we are told that's not the idea to approach the name in that disposition. So yeah, we can know the name is spiritual, but it's Chintamani. Chintamani means can give whatever you ask, so I'll ask something else also. That's not the idea. So we could say that this is an obstacle, no? To have a material conception of the name, approach the name with material purposes or with not too spiritual purposes, if you want to put it like that. Not as spiritual as you know the name can provide, if you will, and you are trying to make less of that, no? You follow my point? So, and you know you should give yourself to that in some way, but you try to give yourself less. You know the name can give you something, and you try to not go for that because you know that's requiring something from me as well. Sometimes we describe this as another form of being a sahaja. Sahaja means, in Sanskrit, those who... generally it's interpreted as those who want something very high and they're not ready for that, but they are rushing for something which is above their reach or their heads or their present qualification. But another form of that, an easy going person, like looking the thing to be easy, is you should be going for something, and instead of going for that, you are trying to remain in a lower stage. You follow? Like, you are ready to leave kindergarten, but you insist on remaining in kindergarten. So that's another way of not being willing to grow, not being willing to mature, not being willing to leave comfort zone, if you will, and staying whimsically somewhere without acknowledging all that you can be at this present moment. So, actually, if we play out this first obstacle, having a material conception of the name, we will see that all other obstacles we mentioned today are included in this one somehow. But let's unfold more in this. Any other thoughts that you have regarding how to counteract material conception of the name? I mean, by the way, you can share any ideas throughout the class. If you have any question in between what I'm saying, you can also raise your hand, no problem, to ask or to contribute something. So, Sumadhi has some contribution to the cause.
Well, I mean, it just came to my mind that if we can remember when chanting that it's service to our guru.
That's a good point, yeah. Yeah, that's an important point that we sometimes mention, that it's nice to... And we will mention that when we mention this idea of chanting as with the ego of being the chanter, but actually the real attitude is I'm doing that in service to my guru. My Gurudev gave me this name for those who have received the name from a guru, but if not, nonetheless, we can think in terms of I've received this name from someone. I mean, it's not that I just one day made up the Maha Mantra and I'm chanting my own mantra or something. Because it's not about to create your own mantra and attain perfection. So we have received that and we are chanting in service to. Now, chanting is service. That's an important point. Many times I've seen the Buddhas that are not catching this. No? And they are thinking like service means only like doing physical stuff, if you will, which is okay. No, I'm not against that. Someone has to wash the pots and clean the room and carry the bags. But sometimes this kind of notion starts to go in that direction. Like doing services, I have to do you seeing something heavy. But if you are sitting and chanting, this sometimes I've seen devotees developing even like an aversion to towards seeing people chanting. Like, what are you doing there? Do some service. You know, you're a lazy guy. You know? But that's not the proper conception. Chanting is service. And Srila Prabhupada will say that's the most important service a disciple has to offer his guru. Not only a service, the most important, he will say. And I will argue that in the same degree that you see chanting as service, you will be able to conceive everything else as service. If you don't see chanting as service, probably you won't see anything else as service. And everything will be performed more from the perspective of karma, you know, of work, of doing things, or having to do things, even, you know, in a more calculative mind. Okay, I have to do things because if not, they kick out me of the temple or who knows what. So I can obtain this result. But so it's very important that we can see chanting as a service. That will extend the vision towards every other field of action during the day. Yes?
From like a technical perspective, would it, in terms of like the nine processes of devotional service, I guess qualifying your shravanam and kirtanam?
What do you say at the end?
Shravanam and kirtanam, it will qualify as both at the same time, or...
What do you mean by they will qualify? They will.
As in, like chanting, just from a technical perspective. Yeah. Is it like you're hearing and you're also chanting?
So you are asking if that enters in the category of hearing as well.
Right, like hearing. Yeah.
Yeah, of course. That's part. That's Shravanam and Kirtanam are like. Of course, sometimes, like as you know, as my Guru said yesterday, Sukadev Goswami highlighted the example of Kirtan, speaking the Bhagavatam is a form of Kirtan. Parikshit Maharaj exemplifies the example of hearing, but it doesn't mean that they were not speaking our hearing. No, Parikshit Maharaj was presenting relevant questions. That's speaking. That's kirtan. And Sukadeva was hearing Parikshit's question, but maybe in terms of proportion, who was speaking and hear more. But my point is, even if though in those cases, which is not the same as chanting, nonetheless, there's always some interaction between the two, Shravan, Kirtan, so what to speak when we are chanting and we are hearing at the same time. And yeah, hearing is an important part of the chanting. No? My Guru Maharaj will, when he's asked generally how to chant the name, he will emphasize, just try to hear the name. No? Because sometimes we may emphasize a lot chant, the word, the act of pronouncing, but we may lose the act of hearing what's, no? And in one sense, as I said the other day, it's not so much about chanting, but about hearing Krishna speaking to us through the name, something like this. No? And that's, again, this has a lot to do with not thinking, I am the one chanting. I'm the one driving the car here. No? It's not that you will hear yourself. Oh, that's, I will hear myself chanting. It sounds like a little bit like, no, spotlight on me, and now I'm going... I'm hearing my... The idea is that you are not hearing yourself, but Krishna is not different from the name, so the name starts to reveal and speak to you, and you're hearing that. That's the idea. So that's a way of positing ourselves in the context of, yes, Shravan and hearing. Just try to hear the name. Again, it's not us chanting, it's now I'm speaking to us. What else? Some other forms of counteracting this? No? Of course, try to, as simple as it may sound, we have to try to chant carefully, try to chant affectionately, try to, as we will see, connect emotionally with the practice, not just like, and be aware of not being drawn into the mechanical repetition, which can happen, and as long as we get aware of that, try to recalibrate. Now that will happen maybe a lot in the beginning, coming and going. And Prabhupada will say, like, to control the mind is to keep straight the tail of a pig. No? So the tail of the pig is like, so you can't keep that straight. You have to do like this and stay like that. No? The moment you it becomes crooked again. No? So he will say this. In the beginning, the mind is like, and you strike it, okay, now it's working. So you lose attention for a minute. We went like shopping, as you mentioned. So Sometimes we laugh, but sometimes you are chanting and you are attentive, 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 and at one point you didn't even realize that you got distracted. It's not that I'm getting distracted. You're like, ooh. Now you're chanting and you saw one bird, and from the bird you connected with a playing childhood and childhood with your aunt that left her body 2 weeks ago. And from a bird you ended up, who knows, connecting with like the movie you saw 25 years ago somehow. And it's like, how did I get this to this point? How much capacity the mind has to put links together. And so if we will know how to do that in the proper connection, of course, that's the idea, everything will converge in Krishna. But generally it's the opposite. As we gave the example of these two friends, that they were like walking together and a crow passed. And so crow generally is not like a symbol of auspiciousness in the Vedic culture. It has more to do with death and eating like corpses and all that. But one devotee saw the crow and say, Haribo, Haribo, and started to say Haribo, which means chant the name of Hari, chant Hari. And the other friend say, but why you are saying Haribo when seeing a crow? No, the only preoccupation of crow is death. No, no crematories and eating corpses, and you are saying Haribo. So the other devotee say, yes, because when I see the crow, my mind goes to the crematory. Crematory, you say? And the crematory, sometimes you will find, of course, this is mostly in classical India, so travel in time with me and in culture. Sometimes in the crematories, you will find the corpses of cows who died naturally. So when those cows who died naturally are dead, their skin is used for making the heads of the mridanga. And with the mridanga, you engage in Hari Kirtan. Hari Kirtan means Hari Bo. So my mind went there. Hari Bo. By seeing a crow. Yeah. But we may be in Kirtan and thinking about crows. Someone say, let's chant Hari, and somehow you connect 3, 4, 5, and you end up like in a crow in your mind. No? So, okay, don't get discouraged by that. It's part of the nature of the gradual process of making the tail straight. As sometimes they say, you cannot avoid birds flying above your head, but you can avoid them making a nest on your head. So sometimes some ideas may come, and you cannot avoid, okay, I didn't want to think about it, but it came. But you can avoid that getting rooted and entering in the niche and fully capturing you. That we can do. So as much as we are aware, we should be able to. And sometimes in connection to chanting, something that helps, just to conclude with this point, of course, it point deserves a whole lecture, a whole retreat, but anyhow, you have to continue unfolding that in your own practice. But something, as we already mentioned before, that will help chanting, not to approach chanting as something material and something ordinary, is to create some, if you will, initial awareness, some preface to the chanting, not just waking up and taking the japa mala, okay, and starting like, because probably you are not coming from a totally transcendental vibration and you put your hand in a big one and you are there in Golok. So you may need to see it to create sacred space, sacred awareness, what you are about to do, recite probably some mantras, we say Bhuta Sudhi, something to recalibrate who am I, what's the name, what am I about to do, putting, as we say sometimes, Achaman, Tilak, I am entering into a very adventurous project, ready for the journey, and okay, now, the following point. Because if you start in the wrong way, probably you won't get back to the proper. Sometimes that affects a lot. How you start something will create like the momentum for what's coming after that. No? If you start like ordinarily, it's more difficult to turn back to see that as something totally extraordinary. So it may take a few minutes of investment to enter into a proper dimension of what's about to happen now. And if in between you see coming man going shopping, as they say, okay, you bring back. Remember in Argentina, the Buddha had one little, how do you say, chest? You put some things. And we have made like 108 quotes, verses from Shastra, or quotes from different sadhus about the name. So we have them, and sometimes we were chanting, and that was it, so the mind was going too much, and 1 minute. We take one. Oh, hmm. And you return to the chanting like refreshed, no? Like upgraded of your, actually this is what I'm doing here, no? Because again, the mind went to the crowd or to the shopping, whatever. You go to one verse, one piece of revelation that, oh, thank you for the reminder, and you get back on track, if you will. Sometimes, again, it may sound like a strategy, but we may know, we have to become skillful in how to deal with our proper mind, with our own mind, sorry. It's not about mind is an enemy and attack and kill her, but just to learn to coexist and to become friends with them. And that may take some time. No, Krishna says in the Gita, as we always say, Mandhurat matmanastasya janatmai vatmanajita anatmanastu satrutevarti tatmaiva satrubhat. Mind can be the worst enemy or the best friend. Depending on how you relate with it. So now maybe the worst enemy, so the great challenge is the worst enemy has to become your best friend. Your worst possible enemy in your life can become your best possible friend. So you have to know how to relate with the mind in such a way that it happens in time. Takes time. So in connection to takes time, let's go to the next one, which is impatience. No, Maharaj, it's not happening. Mm-hmm. It's not happening. Hmm. Rupa Goswami say, yeah.
This one, sorry. On the last point about the mind being a friend, I've always thought it interesting or peculiar how in a lot of prayers you see sadhus address, oh mind.
Yeah.
So it's like...
in a personal...
Yeah, it's like they're addressing it as a friend. Mm. Like, not so like identified with it that it's me, but not that it's like some distant thing to push away, but mind, oh friend, like, please.
Yeah, again, it's their words of address. Because, yeah, it's not me. I mean, one says, I'm not the mind. And also the mind is not some bad guy who is inside there. Actually, there's nobody there. I mean, the mind is not the person. No? That's an important point that we always make. No, it's like the stomach of the subtle body. I like to describe it as such. No, you have the stomach here, and you eat junk food, and you will feel, oh, my stomach is killing me. No? Oh. But there's nobody in the stomach. No, it's not that there's a bad guy called stomach and he's killing you, he has bad intent. You are killing the stomach, actually. You will put it, the stomach is killing me. So the mind is kind of the stomach of the subtle body. If you give junk food, junk thoughts, junk whatever, junk impressions, it goes to the mind. The mind will like react in a way that you feel, oh, my mind is driving me crazy. But there's nobody there. You are killing the mind by including all the junk there. So you follow my point. So in that sense, there's nobody, but of course, it's a tool, if you will. It's an interface that we need to know how to deal with. And sometimes our acharya have personalized, if you will, the addressing of that aspect of our subtle body to make the point. Yeah, we should address this situation in a friendly way and not just about like with a negative orientation, like there are enemies outside and they are killing me, and you start to play victim, entering victim consciousness probably, you know? Oh, the mind is doing this to me. Oh, my stomach, all this, and actually, there are no enemies. As Kumaras said yesterday, environment is friendly. So let's go to impatience. Rupa Goswami says in Upadeshamrita what? Utsaha nischa dhaira. Third verse. Tattat karma pravartana sangatya gatsato vrite sadvir bhaktir prasidati. He shares six important points to attain success in bhakti, you know. So utsaha first, which means enthusiasm, eagerness, etc. And someone may say, so Rupa Swami will tell you, be enthusiastic. And you may say, okay, but it's not that I can press a button and I'm enthusiastic. It's not, I cannot imitate or force myself. It may happen. And what if not, it's not happening? So they will say nischayat. After utsaha, nischayat means try to make efforts with confidence. Intelligent efforts, proper faith will give enthusiasm as a fruit eventually. And you may say, I'm doing that, Rupa Goswami, but it's not happening. enthusiasm is not coming. I've been already doing that like for the last 6 minutes. And Rupa Goswami will say third word, no? Dhairya, which means patience. No? Be patient. Don't be impatient. Sometimes we need more to hear don't be impatient than be patient, whatever, it works better for you. Mm-hmm. So regarding the chanting, impatience plays out, like as we mentioned, like not so much like I'm chanting and nothing is going on. Yeah? Krishna's not replying. I'm not having the particular epiphany I thought I should have or whatever. No? Or sometimes you expect a result which corresponds with 4 stages after the one you are in. No? You may be bhajan, kriya, narthani, prita, and you read some definitions of Mahabhav given by Rupa Goswami, Ujjval Nilamani, and say, wow, while chanting the name, this happens and you become like crazy and faint and tears flow and less cascading. And okay. And you start to suspect Mahabhav symptoms while not being even in Nishtha. And you say, it's not happening. And you may get discouraged and think, oh, this is not working. But only because you were like over expecting something that will come, but probably a few years after, few lifetimes after, whatever the case. So we have to also be expert in ascertaining where we are and which will be the corresponding symptom of the chanting in that particular stage. Mm-hmm. Because there are different chanting, different stages of bhakti, which is another way of saying different stages of chanting. It's another way of saying as shraddha, sadhu, sangha, bhajan, kriyanartan, vidhi, nishtha, rucha, shakti, bhava, prem, in connection to each of those stages, there is a particular type of chanting and a particular symptom of the chanting. So you have to be very expert in ascertaining where I am in the map, in the journey. Because if not, again, I may be a sahaja in one way or the other. I may be expecting something that is not yet to come, or I may be expecting to remain in a stage that I should no longer remain in. So impatience may be in connection with this also. Or demanding, again, as we said, demanding that Krishna responds in a certain way. Demanding that Krishna appears, where is he, without asking enough myself where I am. No? So this is a way of saying, I'm impatient. Where are you? Where are you? And in the echo will return, where are you? Where are you? Where are you? Where are you? The boomerang echo reaction, where are you? Where are you? So we should learn to be patient. And patience means, again, not like passive, anxious waiting. But meanwhile, I'm patient, I'm engaged, and I have faith in the person I'm waiting for, if you want to put it like that. No? It's with confidence, with faith. It's not that I'm mistrusting Krishna while waiting. What we'll do, how we'll refigure, I don't know. That's not faith. Prabhupada Bhaktisiddhanta will say that if we become impatient in relation to the arrangements that God makes in our life, whatever may be the arrangement, if we become impatient as a response to those arrangements, that's showing our lack of faith in Him and our desire to enjoy. I want to do things as I like. I want things to happen as I wish. I don't want to wait for more. I don't want to accept what is coming. So by not being patient, you are showing all those beautiful, embarrassing things. So basically, you are telling Krishna, I don't trust you, basically. No? I don't trust that you know what's better for me. Now I'm praying to you, protect me, give me your mercy, send whatever is better for me. And then something comes, and as I sometimes say, you ask Krishna, give me your mercy, give me your mercy. And Krishna hears, takes note to say, yes, okay, of course. So he throws mercy. And then mercy comes. And you run back to Krishna and start to pray, Krishna, give me mercy. Protect me from this situation. And Krishna will say, that was my mercy from your previous prayer. And now you are asking me mercy to counteract my mercy. How does it work? No. That's not working like that. Because whatever I may send as mercy now, you will come back and pray again to counteract that. So you already have figured out what will be the best possible arrangement in your life. So why you are calling me? Krishna will say, if you are so wise, so intelligent, so brilliant and incredible, sort everything in yourself.
Why are you coming to me to ask for mercy? And so, if you already know, what do you need? Krishna will say. So the idea is, of course, to accept humbly. Many times I don't have a clue what's best for me. Or I may have an idea, but how that will play out. So when that comes in a particular form that went beyond my expectations, I have to trust the background of that. I have to express, not being patient, again, not be anxious and trying to counteract that as soon as possible. Or thinking, oh, okay, it will go quickly. Why does it have to go? If it came for a reason. So don't kick that out. But if you say, okay, how is your life going? It's difficult, but it will go away. But if you are not learning from that which came, that thing that will go away will come back over and over again until you learn the lesson. So be careful not to... Again, patience means not being something tortured, waiting for that to go away, but active and filled with hope in connection to the arrangements of God. In the nature, I would say, in the nature of the intentions of Srinam. Remember, Srinam is Krishna himself. So how the name replies to you, you have to have full confidence in the intentions of the name. Proper intent. That could be like the motto, you say in English, motto?
Motto.
Of the retreat. Like trust and follow grace, basically. When grace is coming, trust grace and follow grace. Grace, you ask for grace, grace is coming, trust grace, follow grace. That was it means to get to Nishtha in one sense. Nishtha means firm faith, which implies before firm faith, you have some faith, but sometimes you don't have enough faith and you are not able to fully trust and you become impatient and you become anxious. So you have to increase this aspect of Sharanagati probably. I have full confidence Krishna will always protect me. I totally accept that he's maintaining me. No. It's not just saying lip service to these ideas, but we have to inhabit. These concepts are to be inhabited. They have place for us to live there eternally. So, this has to do with impatience, if you will. How to counteract impatience, of course, as we were mentioning, trying to develop trust, trying to accept the will of God, trying to become instruments of divine mercy. Being grateful, that's an important one. Instead of asking, why this is coming, I hope this goes out as soon as possible, that's not very grateful. But something is coming, you learn to be grateful for whatever is coming. Maybe coronavirus. So you will translate that as coronavirus. Some mercy is there for sure. And even if sometimes helped, you can make a list, a written or mental list of all the things that already came to your life to appreciate, to develop some positive. There is whole movements about gratefulness. There's one Christian monk, I don't remember his name now, he's from Europe, but he has a whole movement about gratefulness only. So that's, he's pounding that post forever. Gratefulness, gratefulness, gratefulness. Of course, as we spoke the other day, there is places, Srila Semara say, to go beyond gratitude. But if you cannot go beyond gratitude, first you are not grateful. No. Beyond gratitude doesn't mean below gratitude. Beyond gratitude means you are so intimate that I don't need to tell thank you. Because we belong to one another. So thank you may create the idea you are giving something to me as a separate thing, but we are not separate. That's the highest synthesis, beyond gratitude, but it's not so easy to get there, no? So be careful of, in the name of being beyond gratitude, being ungrateful. They are two different things. So, yeah, be careful with impatience. You know? And instead of asking for more to Krishna, just be grateful for those things that already came. Sorry. And maybe if you ask for... Because sometimes we can become like... How to say? Machines of requesting mercy. Like, give me mercy, give me mercy, give me mercy, give me mercy. And Krishna's saying like, wait a minute. I mean, I gave you like tons of that. You're not doing anything with that. You are putting them in the bodega and you're asking for more. I mean, do something with that first.
So you can ask for mercy to know what to do with the mercy that already came. That's the way to put, okay, I know mercy came, I can see it on some level, but still I've not been fully accomplished into what to do with that. So I will ask for mercy so I can properly honor the mercy that already came. And not just like ask for more, like accumulating. The more I have, the better. No, you have to know what to do with whatever you have. The following, because if not, we enter into this material mentality of the more, the best. Now, the more I have, the more money, the more mercy. You can just shift from money to mercy, but still retain this mentality of quantity, quantitative bodega of mercy. But what you are doing with that bodega? Mercy is not to go to the bodega ever, not even a drop of that. So as we say, Krishna is already there, waiting in the form of Nam. So he's waiting. He's patient. He's, as we said the other day, he has been waiting. As Paramatma still in the heart, not leaving any note. I'm tired of this and sick of all this nonsense. Find some other Antaryami in a witness. So much patience is there, so much tolerance. So we are expected to reciprocate accordingly or in some degree. Okay, let's continue. Today's lecture may be a little bit longer than usual, as you may start to realize. Well, we have eternity, so there is time on our side. So, another point, absorption in mundane thoughts. So that can happen. Some of these things will be interconnected, as you can see. So absorption in mundane thoughts, maybe you are chanting, maybe your tongue is saying Hare Krishna. So in one part of our minds, 1% of the Mahamantra is going on. But the other 99% may be preoccupied with something else. What do you think? Have you experienced that? It happens. No? So the lips here are pronouncing the name. Namakshar Bahir Hai. Namar Nahi Hai. Bhaktivinoda Thakur say. The letters may be sounding, but that's not Srinam. Necessarily. Nama Akshar means the letters that make the Nam. H-A-R-E. Maybe coming out. But that's not necessarily indicating Srinam Prabhu is there. So sometimes this happens. No? Our minds are like in one part the tongue is saying Hare Krishna, but the mind is somewhere else. And at some point, if we don't deal with that, comes what we may call restlessness. And you stop chanting altogether and you do something else. Or even worse, you continue chanting and you start doing something else. That's even worse. No. You start checking emails and calling and writing and cooking with the left hand and doing shopping and cleaning and bathing, whatever. No, but how much does it count? No? Driving and chanting. Oh my God, I don't want to be in that car. No. Like when the devotee asked me in Switzerland, Mar, is it okay to chant while driving? I mean, you do it, but I won't enter that car myself. You know? Because or you are not driving too attentively, or you are not chanting too attentively. So I don't know what of the two is worse, but I won't enter that car, just in case. So we have to be careful of the things. So sometimes it helps us to know how to chant japa, how sometimes it helps more to know how not to chant japa. No, we can begin at that point. How not to chant japa. Don't chant japa while being in the class. Don't chant japa if someone else is doing kirtan. Everyone's doing kirtan, you're like, don't chant japa checking Instagram, social media. Don't chant japa while doing something else. As simple, to be a reductionist. Only do that because you are trying to to develop your love and relationship with Krishna. You're inviting Krishna to appear, and if they come rather than Krishna come, you're like, okay, yeah. I mean, it's not a serious project, basically, a serious relationship. So while chanting, we should only chant. I know that's not the all in all, but for some of us, that's important to have it clear. No? Even sometimes it's good to chant and not do anything else. Even I mean, we sometimes may need to walk to exercise our knees or something, but in such a way, ideally, that is not distracting our japa, because sometimes we may also walk and do sightseeing more than chanting japa. No? And I'm going for a japa walk. Okay, but you judge the tree by its fruit. Now you tell me after the walk, where was your mind? Into the neighborhood or into the name? So I'm not fully forbidding that. I mean, I'm not forbidding anything. You do whatever you like. But the point is, you be honest with yourself, which was the result of that. If that's work for you, I'm okay. Of course, there are certain parameters. Now, if you tell me, no, Mark, for me it works to go to heavy metal concert and chant japa in between. That really works. I said, no, that cannot happen. No? Don't cheat yourself. No? Don't cheat myself, but don't cheat yourself. But there are certain parameters for certain things. But generally, the idea is try to do to chant in a way that really you are there, present, and so on. You can immerse yourself. Mahaprabhu is saying in first verse of Sikshasthana, what? Pratipadam purnam brita shradhanam sarvatma snapanam. Sarvatma snapanam means your whole being is fully bathed in Srinam. Snapanam means bathing itself. Sarva atma. Sarva atma means not only the soul, but mind, body, senses, complete immersion. That's what we are trying to do in a retreat. Retreat is an immersion on all levels. Try to immerse yourself in the experience. Well, like sometimes the example is given when sometimes the kids are playing in the water and they go out. They say, okay, let's see who can keep themselves below water the more time. Hold the breath inside the water without taking breath. And they go. So something similar. I don't want to compare that Nam is a game, if you will. But we are trying to immerse into Srinam and not desiring to breathe any material air, if you will. And trying to really become focused. No? Because it takes time. No? To chant attentively is not again, a joke in the beginning. Not that I sit and I am totally in samadhi. No? We have to, again, prepare the moment. Try to start focus and try to gradually enter deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper, and not superficial and more superficial and more superficial and totally distracted and doing something else while chanting, but the opposite, going the other direction. So it may take some time, so it's important to... And when our mind focuses on something, it experiences pleasure. You can see that even in the material world. I don't know, some person will go to a soccer game match and they are for 1 hour and 30 minutes just focus on one ball. I mean, they are focused and they are like, wow, they are there, they are not distracted, they are absorbed, they are relieved on so many things, so their mind is focused and they are happy. Of course, unless the ball enters into the wrong place and they are losing the game. But the point is, as long as the mind has a focus, there is satisfaction, interestingly. I don't want to enter into the technical, yogic, psychological terms for all this, but the citta, this place where all the samskaras are stored, gets expanded when there is proper focus. So there is happiness, and there is peace. Krishna said in the Gita, you cannot be happy without peace first. So when the mind is focused, you have peace, and then happiness will follow. Of course, those people who watch the match, after the match finishes, there's no more ball to continue to be focusing, and all these other things start to pop up from their teeth, and they're in anxiety, and they're killing each other after the game, even. So my point is, we need to concentrate on Srinam, and the more we concentrate, we will derive some bliss from that, some peace, some happiness. It's not just concentrating for the sake of concentration. And something important to notice is that the mind won't be concentrated on something unless it finds some purpose and meaning in that direction. I mean, you won't direct your mind towards something that you consider totally purposeless, meaningless. So you need to find meaning in what you are concentrating on. So the point is, sometimes the mind runs from the chanting, not because the chanting is purposeless, but because we stopped finding purpose in the chanting. We lose sight of how much purpose and meaning is there, and the mind cannot stay for a minute in something without purpose, or run somewhere else, go shopping to find meaning. No, goes meaning shopping here and there. Oh, this idea. Oh, yeah, so some purpose is there. Some purpose. So you have to bring back the mind to what I'm doing here. What's the meaning of this? And the mind, okay, we can focus. You follow my point? So when we distract, the point is we lost meaning in chanting. So again, this is not a button that we press and we are already there and we have proper absorption in transcendence and so on. It's a gradual process, giving ourselves through to the chanting, through prayer, having proper, acknowledging proper healthy repentance, begging for mercy. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur has mentioned in this connection that no one chants purely the name without going through a colossal struggle. Not to discourage anyone, but just to make it clear. It takes some part of our side. As my Guru Maharaj likes to say, you have to make effort to get grace. So chanting is getting grace, but you have to make some effort from your part. You have to enter into a certain mood, into a certain disposition to tune in with grace. That's sadhana. So sadhana is... Bhaktivinoda Thakur. No one chants purely without going through colossal struggle. Colossal doesn't mean something impossible or something that you cannot do, of course. No? It means something that you can do. But probably we are not doing. So that's what makes the difference from where we are and where we can be. Let's continue. Another point. Having the ego of being the chanter of the holy name. That's an interesting one. This type of pritak bhav, sometimes it's called. Pritak bhav means like to see myself as a separate entity, not as an integrated part of a whole, but to see myself like alienated from my source and from everything else. What we call ahamkara sometimes. Ahamkara is translated as false ego, but ahamkara means I do. Like to see myself, I'm the doer. Independent doer, no? From everything else, disconnected from my source. So this means pritak bhava, pritak drisha, to see myself or to see anything independent of God, no? Not connected with its source. As we mentioned, sambandha means the knowledge that helps us to tie everything back together. Everything is connected with God. As we say the other day, we are inside the name. What to speak of, I am putting the name in my tongue, I am the chanter. I am one Shakti of Srinam, which is included there. Sri Sanatan Goswami explains that one of the symptoms of thinking that I am the doer, or I am the chanter, is to consider the name as Jiva Dina. Jiva Dina means it's under the control of my tongue. Maybe you won't say like that, but you may like act out like that, the idea. No? The name is under the control of my tongue. I decide when it counts, when it goes, when it stops. It's a tanmatra, technically. Tanmatra means a sense object. No? This is a sense object for touch. Name is a sense object for my tongue. Of course, it's not the idea. Instead of the name being called Jivadina under the control of my tongue, my tongue should be considered Namadina. My tongue should be under the control of the name. That's the proper... That's how we can control our tongue. Not trying to control... Using our tongue to put other things under the tongue's control. But putting the tongue under the control of higher taste, higher agency, in the name of Krishna. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur gave once the example regarding the deity. He will say, when you are in front of the deity, you shouldn't think, I am seeing Krishna. You should think, Krishna is seeing me. To begin with. To locate yourself more as an object, not as the subject, as the seer, as the taster, as the controller almost. I'm not the seer, that's in Sanskrit, is drishta. Drishta means the seer, but I'm drishya. Drishya means the one being seen. So God is seeing me. I'm not seeing God. I mean, I'll, it may be nice, but the point is, he's always seeing me. I'm not so much the one who is seeing him. He see him when he wants to show himself to me. So we may be a witness in relation to the physical world, the sakshi. No? We can see the world materially, but in relation to the spiritual world, that's another thing. we are not seeing it. So object-subject relationship. We are, Srila Sivaranath will say, in relation to the super subject, we are objects. We may feel that in relation to the world's objects, we are subjects. We are the ones who use and manipulate, but in relation to Bhagavan, which is super subject, we are an object in his hands. No? That's it. So it's important that we can see the Srinam is, it's not a tanmatra, a sense object, and that extends to everything. Deity is not a sense object, Krishna is not a sense object, Guru is not a sense object, Vaishnavas are not sense objects, Prasad is not sense object. No? Prasad is not just food to delight my tongue. The very word prasad means grace. So yesterday I have to confess something. I have some problem with serving prasad to myself. I respect the local dynamics, but the point is that for me, prasad, the idea of prasad is grace. So I cannot give grace to myself. I need to receive grace. So I need the Vaishnavas to give me their mercy. Although externally it may sound, oh, you are accepting being served by others. But actually, it's not so much like that. It's more like, I need mercy and prasad is mercy. I cannot take mercy and give it to myself. That has to come from above. Now this famous example in Srila Siddhar Maharaj's mouth, once one devotee asked, is there some service I can do? But nobody knew at that moment, so he at one point saw prasad needs to be served. So he went there and started serving prasad. And then came like a senior member of the community, say, what are you doing? I'm serving prasad. Yeah, they said, this is not just like, I mean, this prasad means grace. Who can give grace? Not everyone can give grace. He made the point. I understand the practical dynamics, that's a separate thing, but the principle is that grace is to be given by higher agents. So not anyone can go there and... It's not like just putting food on the plate. That's my point. No, it's not a sense object. No, they are not to be... Again, I cannot see Sri Dham. The Dham is seeing me. I cannot see Gauji Gopal. Gauji Gopal is seeing me. I cannot eat prasad, but hopefully prasad will eat me. No? In the sense of, will dissolve my subtle body, will devour my illusion. We should get accustomed to deal with the things from that particular perspective, if you will. I cannot see Gurudev for who he is, but he is watching me. Not to go neurotic, not in that sense he's watching you, you know, like Big Brother or anything, but yeah, he's watching you with a merciful glance. But I cannot see him actually fully, but my hope is he's seeing me. Under that glance, I have some hope and so on. So as I mentioned, regarding to the super subjective, we are to be objects. We should have that disposition. So as Sumati said today, practices like japa or kirtan, many of the things we are telling in this retreat about japa also, of course, extend to kirtan, sankirtan. So when we engage in these practices, again, these are services. They are not just like something I do independently. So we should engage in these practices, japa, kirtan, with this awareness. Oh, these practices have been enacted in the past by great devotees. No, I'm not the first one doing them. I'm not creating them. I'm receiving them from them. I'm receiving these practices from someone who was engaged in those practices, who received that from someone who was engaged in those practices. So I'm doing that not alone, not isolated from that chain of personalities. So I should perform these practices as a follower of the parampara, as a member of that lineage, not independently. I'm not an independent chanter of japa. I received the Srinam from Sri Guru. I'm doing that in his service, and he in his service of his. So this is part of a project in which I'm part of a big, and that also helps to feel ourselves accompanied. It's not that I'm alone chanting japa and it's only about myself and Krishna, or I have to struggle with all this, but this is all with the support, blessings, connection coming from so many personalities. Now that's a nice way also to conceive the chanting. You know, Mahaprabhu chanted the name in a certain way, and that name was passed to his direct associates, and that was passed and so on in parampara. So the heart's love and contribution of all these persons is there, invested in the name that now we are receiving from Sri Guru. His own heart and the heart of the whole parampara is inside that little bag. That's a way of, to meditate about that. What do I have in this bag? The heart of my Gurudev is inside this bag. So how will I treat the heart of my Guru? Now that's why we need also say we can chant with japa mala. That's a way of visualizing and engaging even our sense of touch. I give a massage to the heart of my Gurudev. No? To the feet of Srila Gurudev. And the whole parampara is there. All their heart, all their prem, all their love and really. They are all there in that little small bag. So be careful, no? Because very important things may appear in small packages, as Guru Maharaj will say. That's a way to, again, become aware of what I am about to do when I'm putting my hand inside this little bag. What's there? Who is there? In plural, who are there? So all this helps us to become aware. Again, I'm not the chanter of the name. I'm entering into this world of grace accompanied by all these great personalities, and in their service I'll try to do something for them. Let's continue with the next one. Again, later in time you can take time and further unfold this according to how you consider it. Another one may be superficiality or complacency. One may be a word for the other. Or lack of introspection. And again, this not only means when I sit and chant, but while conducting during my daily life, which should be aligned with my chanting. So we can, of course, by saying superficiality, complacency, we can go in so many directions. But let's begin with the basic one, which is conceiving ourselves as that we are not. While chanting, which of course is including what we already mentioned somehow, to be full, over-identified with mind projections, with false sense of self, and chanting from that place, and missing what was actually taking place in the present moment, as Atmas. No? So now comes this idea of present moment. That's a good way of transcending superficiality, like try to situate in the present. Gaudiya mindfulness. It's interesting, in English you have the word present, and when you give someone a gift, that's also called present. and to be somewhere means to be present. So to be present in the present is the best present you can give to yourself. Interesting. Different things, but all with this, the same word. Dr. Asak now likes to make sense of words in new ways. So present, no? It's a present time, it's a present sense, you being present in that particular time, and it's a gift. And Bhakti Rasa has three more ideas to share.
Well, also it's pre-sent.
Uh-huh.
It's something that was sent to us, given to us.
Okay, thank you so much. So we may do a whole list only of words coming, sprouted, springing from present. Krishna Jivani has another one.
This also reminds me, one time a very good friend told me, like, being present isn't also in the mode of goodness, because it's something that you are doing right now.
Yeah.
But if you are thinking about the future, living in the future, you are in the mode of passion,
yeah.
Because you're worried about something that is going to happen in the future, you cannot change it right now. And living in the past is mode of ignorance, because it's already past, you cannot really do anything about it.
Krishna Jivani read my mind, because that was the next point I was going to mention. So it's good. We are on the same page. We are connected. We are in the present. That's a good point. No? And our acharyas many times emphasize this idea of course, the mode of goodness, sattva guna, is not the ultimate goal, but it's an important platform for, no? Like when I give the example of when you go, I do that often. I have to go to airports and I have to fly somewhere else. So if I want to reach from here Colombia, which I need to do in a few weeks, first I have to go to the airport. But the fact that I reached the airport doesn't mean that I'm already in Colombia. Then I have to find the flight and board the flight and go to Colombia. So Sattvaguna is kind of reaching the airport. Still, you have to take the flight, no, to transcendence. But you are in the airport. The platform is there. So then you have to pick which is the flight you want to take. But at least you are on the airport. No? So that's a way of saying you are getting closer to that. So being present in the present means has to do more with sattvas. Krishna even said future has to do with rajas, trying, being concerned and preoccupied, all these things that make happen, or I want to happen, or I don't know if they will happen, and agitation, desires, and a more tamasic orientation will be towards the past, because in the past you cannot do anything to change that, but nonetheless you spend time traveling back. Of course you can travel just to solve something in the present, just the only way to go to the past. As I like to say sometimes, in one sense, in the present, we have the exact dose of past and future that we need to deal with, if you will. Because in the present, the result of what you did in the past is in the present. So in that sense, the past is in the present. Don't get much more distracted to the past. And the future is also present in the present because whatever you are doing in the present, that will create your future. So you have the future in the present in that way. So you don't need to go more to future and past than what the doses of them that you can find in the present. So it's important to remain in the present and trying to, while chanting, for example, the Bhagavatam uses this word shakshi twa. Shakshi means shelter, witness, like Sakshi Gopal. So witness means this idea of, even if something is coming in my mind, I witness that. No? I separate myself from that movement of the mind. I do not identify with that coming and going that I know it's not me. So that means shakshitva, or witnesshood, or I don't know if that word exists in English. But this, interestingly, the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, Sanatana Goswami says there that if you are not situated in the state of sakshitva, you cannot engage in Sudha Bhakti. No? If you don't enter this mood of being a witness, no? Instead of being carried by rajas, tamas, past, future, whatever, no? But instead, if you can see through the gunas, can see through these layers of time, and you see I'm eternal, because on one point is, okay, I'm in the present, I'm in sattva, but in one sense beyond that is, I'm beyond time. I mean, we as eternal souls, we are even beyond past, present, future, if you will. We belong to what we may like to call eternal present. So these are some ideas for us to try to be present with Srinam. And understanding, I try to be present with the name, but the name is transcendental. So that type of present is not mundane present, it's eternal present, basically. So it's important to learn to be ourselves in the present. The other day I was hearing one interesting definition of trauma. The word trauma. So sometimes trauma, we may think, I mean, so many things. What's trauma? But the definition that I heard was trauma means a restriction of your authentic self in the present moment. Yeah, a restriction of your authentic self in the present moment. So you are going through a particular situation in the present, and instead of being your authentic self, all that you can be till now, if you will, but considering all that you can be in the future, if you restrict that in the present, that's what we call trauma. It's not about what happened outside, but how you chose to respond to that. Because for many people, something traumatic is just anything. For some other people, that's not traumatic. So how much you are restricting who you actually are and all that you can be in the present moment. So it's important to embrace the present moment. And of course, you can only be present in the present. No, that's the only place you can inhabit. I always remember one quote from one Facundo Cabral, one Argentinian philosopher and musician. He will say, "You better get accustomed to live in the present because there's no other place for you to live in." No matter how hard you try, there's no second option. So better you get accustomed to that because that's the only place. So as we say, that has to do with our chanting of the name, investing quality time in the relationship, in the while being in the present moment. And of course, the next question may be why sometimes we escape so much the present? Why the mind is traveling toward the past and the future? Because of course, in the present, you have to acknowledge certain things. You have to see things that for some reason, depending on the case, we don't want to be aware of. We are afraid of, for some misconception, misreading of reality. We don't want to accept certain things that actually we need to. And we may be escaping constantly the present moment. We don't want to address those things that need transformation, that are begging for integration. Because we may be still identified with something else. So we may be terrified about being in the present. with all that it entails. But again, we should understand that terror is just a miscalculation of reality. I don't need to be terrified about the present. Actually, I need to be terrified about escaping from the present. As challenging as it may be, embracing my present, it's way more healthy and and real than any other thing. So it's important to... And again, here, lots of unconscious stuff is taking us in those directions. We may not be even aware of why we don't want to deal with the present, because there are so many, as I mentioned before, some scars or impressions that are stored in our citta, our, in psychological terms, unconscious mind. And many of those unconscious mind impressions are defining our sense of who we are and how we move in life and which are the choices we make and what is what we like and we dislike. And all those things are like secretly preserved there. We don't realize those things. They are lying the deeper layer of our psyche, if you will. No? And they hold immense information. But sometimes those things are not reaching the superficial levels of our faculties. We don't see them like, I'm doing this because of this. So that's the unconscious. We are not conscious of that, but that's playing a very crucial role. So it's important to gradually become aware of that, to bring the unconscious to the conscious and work with that by being in the present, by opening to what the name wants to reveal. Mahaprabhu is saying, Chetu Dharpanam Arjanam, which means clean the mirror of your citta. That's the first effect of the name. Clear the mirror of your unconscious mind. Another word of saying is, as I like to put it, is embrace your unconscious mind. Accept that. Clean the bodega. No, sometimes I compare the unconscious mind to the bodega because that's the place you throw all the things that you don't want. You don't know what to do with that, where to put. Put that in the bodega. The bodega. But you never check the bodega. You are just using the bodega to throw stuff. And at one point, the bodega has a life of its own. No? And you start to hear voices coming from the bodega, and it's not Juan. No, some boys, some arm. What?
Or snakes.
Yeah, whatever. There are no snakes. There are other types of snakes. So the bodega has a life of its own. You're walking nearby, and you hear some voice, sure, come. No, I don't want to go there. So you even inaugurate the second bodega to keep throwing other stuff instead of going and let's clean the bodega. That's a project. Imagine if I said, okay, now we're the project. Today we will go and clean the bodega. Even this one. Any bodega, not this one. It's like, okay, let's prepare psychologically. No? That will be a lot of stuff to find. So Mahaprabhu say the first effect of the name is the name will reach those foundational unconscious section and try gradually bring that to the conscious awareness so you can deal in the present with that without being terrified, without being afraid, without being over-identified with that. So we need to give room for our citta, for our unconscious mind to be expressed, to express those things that we cannot see in our normal conscious orientation. In our daily life, we see things, we perceive things, but some other things remain the bodega. So one way to do that is, again, to allow the name, to allow guru, also to allow sadhu, to address in ourselves things that we ordinarily wouldn't go there. So you may sit in front of the sadhu, and the sadhu will say, okay, let's go to the bodega now. And it's like, oh, I'm not so sure. By speaking, not by literally going, but by speaking about certain uncomfortable truths, if you want to put it like that. Generally, we won't go by ourselves due to our fixed ideas, no? Our fixed system will go in certain direction always. And you sit in front of the salons, will go in the other way. And you're like, where are you going? Why are you saying, where are you taking me in that, to that place? Oh, it feels scary. You know? That's when you need to trust, to open your heart to all the... And chanting the Nam is no different from that. So again, anyhow, some words in connection to to how to deal with superficiality, with complacency. Are you still alive for a few more?
I have a question.
Yes.
How to be present if something really terrible and like not helping how it actually has happened?
Example?
If something is happening that's like really terrible from like...
But for example, what's terrible? That's a question.
Okay. Let's
have a practical example.
The devotee is in Ukraine and there's like bombing on top of the building. So how to be in this presence and be focused on Krishna? I mean, it might be easier in a sense, but if you have to escape and stuff like that, or someone...
You mean if you are the devotee who is being bombarded?
Yeah, or something like this that doesn't seem very conducive to spiritual practice and like peaceful mind. Like how to be present there.
Oh, of course. we have to remain practical. No? If the house here is burning now, I mean, you have to be present in the present, and the present means run as soon as you can, you know, because the house is burning down. I mean, that's our present moment, and it's not that, oh, you are not focused on Krishna, in the name of Krishna this moment, you are just like... I mean, I remember I was in Argentina some years ago, and I was chanting at that moment. I'm trying to focus, and suddenly came and shouts, like, so what to do now? Should I keep focus in the name, or should I think maybe some urgency is there and I should be focused? And I break my focus in Sri Name and try to be present in the urgent cry of that person. Say, one house in the farm is burning down and there are the boats inside. So of course you can imagine that I didn't say, I have not finished my round yet. So let them wait. I'm chanting. This is the most auspicious thing to do. So they are being blessed by my chanting at this moment. I will pray for them meanwhile. It doesn't work like that. So there's some practical. So I stop, put that and start running in the present and trying to render Vaishnav Seva by saving them from fire. So of course there are some practical considerations. I'm speaking here in a general way. Of course, that then how that takes shape in a particular given circumstance, that's another thing, and we should remain commonsensical, no? In that context, which sometimes is not so common. To have common sense is not that common, but we should. But I'm sharing some ideas in it, again, general standard situation that we may be chanting or dealing with some. But in between, that may be emergencies or exceptions to the rule. There are more, hopefully, exceptions that we are not every day like in those situations. So emergency exceptions are exceptions. And the same principle takes another shape. It's not that you are totally deviating from that at all.
Maybe it wasn't the best example. Like, let's say someone has severe depression. It's like emergency is kind of easier to react to. But if someone is like sick with severe depression, and it's not very conducive to remain in that kind of
person. That person may need therapy and certain treatments to be able to then take proper advantage of what we are saying here today, if you will. No? So, but it's still connected to what we are speaking. That's my point. No? Of course, I'm not the person who will tell you, unless I have this problem or I have a depression crisis, and I'll tell, chant and be happy.
that's our motto, our slogan, chant and be happy. And I will give them one class. This is the audio of our Japa retreat classes. Hear that and take advantage of the name. Of course, there is place for that also, but first that person may need, okay, this is the address of one psychiatrist I know. It's very good. He may help you to deal with. You may need to be balanced and this and that, and that's okay. No? And then we can speak about this other thing. But so there's places we spoke the other day. You can give charity to people, even someone is starving to death. Okay, let's speak about japa. No, give me one banana or something. Okay, then we can speak about japa, if you will. Like the point is, we have to remain practical. No? It's not like just give the name, just speak about that, and everything else is irrelevant. No, there is place for assisting every person, even everyone, on physical, psychic, emotional level, so they can be whole person, whole human beings. And as much as they are properly situated there, we can speak about other things. If they are not situated there, probably we shouldn't be speaking about certain things, and it's okay. We'll speak about that tomorrow when we speak about the ninth offense to the name, which is to insist on giving the name or in speaking about the name to someone who doesn't have the faith or for whatever reason is not the moment. So if you insist, you are committing an offense in the name. So the name itself is telling you, stop insisting. It's not the moment. Anyhow. A few words more on complacency before going to the next point. As of course, we already mentioned that, but never take the name for granted. Never. I mean, it's easy to say that. But try to be aware not to become accustomed to the extraordinary things. We are surrounded by extraordinary items. Vaishnavas, Prasad, Murti, Harinam, Bhagavatam, Sadhusang. All of that is not from this world. But we may get accustomed to that. So sometimes we need to change some of our maybe daily dynamics or something to have a new perspective of that, or like an experience like this. Like a retreat when we for a moment concentrate on something in a particular way and I forgot that all those things were there in the name. So you can have a new experience of something, quote-unquote, old, which is never old, it's always new. But, no? Or by proper sangha, no? If you remain close to people who are deeper, if you will, than you, more advanced, they will take you always out of the comfort zone and keep showing you, this is not ordinary as you think, don't get mechanical, don't get accustomed. So sometimes we need to force ourselves to the association or the discourse or the example of great personality would keep reminding you the extraordinariness of every item of your devotional life. Or sometimes if we feel still I'm being complacent, I'm taking things for granted for whatever reason, you can also pray for with proper repentance. In Sanskrit there's a word anutapa. Interestingly, anutapa means repentance, and anutapa means after anu, tapa. Tapa means burn. So anu tapa, what follows the burn or the fire. So like implying you commit some mistake or you fall into complacency. So you acknowledge that and then comes something else. No? You have some particular feeling. Again, not neurosis, no, not guilt trip, not taking the whip and starting. But as Mahaprabhu said, durdaiva mitrishnami hajjanina nura. I don't feel attraction for chanting. I don't feel that eagerness. Krishna, help me. I appreciate all the beautiful things. Three lines of appreciation, one line of lamentation. In Utkalika Balari, Rupa Goswami, interestingly, he says, kripam kripana gaminim. He makes a play of words with the word kripa and kripana. No? In Sanskrit, kripa means mercy, and kripana means miserable or wretched. So he says, kripa follows kripana. No? In other words, mercy will follow that person who realizes himself, herself to be wretched. Again, not in over-identifying with that, not this, but just acknowledging in proper repentance my wretchedness. So my kripananess. No? By addressing that, kripa comes. It's a play of words that he's made. Interestingly, kripa and kripana also
they are closely related with this idea of anuttapa. Anuttapa, again, as I mentioned, is repentance, but also anuttapa can mean mercy. Which anuttapa also means that which follows the fire. So we could say which follows the fire of repentance is mercy. If you go through that fire in a healthy way, mercy will come. So it's a very interesting connection between these two ideas of acknowledging our complacency or whatever with proper repentance, and that will attract the required mercy to pass the test, basically. What else? We have two more. We have blessings of Gaurasundara to continue. Okay, one of them is, as we mentioned, indifference for chanting, or to chanting, or if you want to put it in other words, emotional disconnection with the chanting. Which again, this has to do with what we spoke in the previous class. No? Emotional disconnection means I'm not relating to the name as a person. I know that the name is a person, but maybe I'm not making the necessary effort to realize that the name is a person. It's a form of indifference, for example, in a relationship. I know who you are, I know how I should relate with you, but I'm not doing what I should do for that to happen. So you are not investing all the concern you could invest. Nobody's forcing you to that, but if you are willing to do that, you have to know there are some terms and conditions for that to work, if you will. No? Or emotional disconnection also can be chanting and getting too much stuck in your head and not going through the heart level, basically, if you will. No, as Ahur Guru Maharaj said the other day, if you chant from your heart, the mind will follow. The head, if you will, to put it, follow. But if you get stuck in thoughts, which can be pretty usual, and as was here in the other day, Richard Rowe will say, we are addicted to different things, but all of that share a like unanimous addiction, which is we are addicted to our thoughts. To think in certain way, and we are told we are not only attached, but addicted. So it's easy to get stuck in that thought addiction and get stuck in the head and not being able to make the rite of passage, if you will, to the heart, and therefore chant with some emotional disconnection. So again, we should not forget that chanting is something between two. It's a dialogue, it's a conversation. I remember one lady in Kansas, when I went recently, she told me that she was having some difficulty in chanting. And she asked that to my Guru Maharaj, and she had some sort of epiphany, which was interesting, that he told her, well, but chanting is, try to conceive of chanting as a dialogue. No, it's something, there's someone else involved, at least, to begin with. And for her, that was like, ting, abracadabra, or something like, aha moment. Like, okay, oh. And she told me, from that moment, I didn't have any more problems with chanting. It was like, wow. No. I'll have to pray strongly to have some of that epiphany. You know? So it's a relationship, again, with other person. These are all personalistic approaches. Remember, we belong to a personalist school. So emotional disconnection means I'm not being as personal as I could be. We will speak more about some of the things also tomorrow about Nama Parat. But in this connection, in connection to all these being personalistic approaches, no, the name is a person, chanting is a relationship. Let's finish with the last obstacle, which is impersonalism. Which somehow is kind of in connection with the other one. So, of course, impersonalism, basically, because in our particular tradition, we worship God as a person, monotheistic tradition. There are some other schools who will say, ultimately, the Absolute has no personality. That's not our take. And we may not subscribe to that, and officially we may not be promoting that, but we may be instead nonetheless promoting forms of impersonalism by not being ourselves a person, by not relating to God as a person, although we say he's a person, the supreme personality of Godhead. But how much do I relate to Krishna as a person? How much he's still a theological concept and not an alive person in my life? How much he he's taking part in my life, and so on. This place for this type of inquiry. But in this case, regarding to Srinam, the term basically implies impersonalism means not to relate with the name as a person, basically. Not treating the name as an individual. And an individual has their own wishes, their own style. I mean, as we have, God has also. It's not just, okay, God is a person, but I'm not interested in his personality. I mean, we are worshiping the supreme personality of God. He has a supreme personality, which means lots of details are there in his way of being. We are supposed to relate with that, to love that also. Not just to deal with that, tolerate that, allow that, but to be fall in love with the ways of his personality. And also, to be impersonal, while chanting not only doesn't mean not to treat the name as a person, not to see God as a person, but not to invest our whole individuality while chanting. Not being fully persons ourselves. We will speak about more on this maybe in our class on prayer, about the idea of, as we already mentioned these days, individuation. I am an individual, but what's all that I can be as an individual? How much I'm trying to be individual and offer a very unique, single, diversified presentation of myself as an offering for the pleasure of the name. That will be Krishna pleasure, not just giving some generic, overall, abstract entity. That's me. Here I am for your pleasure. And Krishna will start to ask you who you are, what do you like, what's your all your individual deeds. I don't know. Curious me. That's not personal, Krishna will say. We are still promoting impersonalism. So even if you don't allow yourself to be fully an individual, that's a form of impersonalism. If you don't allow to be all that you can be by the presence of grace in your life, that's a form of impersonalism. We are something, but we can become so much more by interaction with divine grace. If you don't allow that to happen, if you present obstacles, you are being impersonal. You are going against all that you can be as a person. You will remain on some form of complacency, okay, going back to the previous one, to remain more like Thomas Merton will use one quote. I was like, no, on one side he's speaking about becoming all that you can be and not being complacent, but if you choose not to do so, say then you become an inert member of the middle class. Not become, you remain. No, like inert member, like they're without opinion, without voice, without individuality, without thought, without any, and just following whatever everyone else is doing and imitating, copy-pasting, and not taking the trouble to be yourself, basically. And I'm emphasizing this because this impersonalism, it's maybe more present than what we think it is present. We may be very much concerned about condemning the impersonalism in others or in other schools, but how about our own Mayavad, our own impersonal? That lies, I would say, lies at the very root of our subconscious self-image. In a subconscious way, we do not still see ourselves as all that we can be. We are, many occasions, reducing that to something almost bordering non-existence, onto an object. I'm nothing. Or so until that's addressed, until that's resolved, I mean, that will remain a very powerful doubt. I don't know who I am. Am I something? I mean, people nowadays, philosophically speaking, say, you're nothing, you don't exist. And that goes way beyond impersonalism, that's nihilism. You cannot have a real relationship with God if you are not a real person yourself. You cannot have a real relationship with God if you do not treat yourself as a real person. No, if you still are sure that you are not real yourself, how much you can relate with God, the most real person? You have to become the most real version of yourself if you want to deal with the most real personality. But if you are very convinced that you don't have an identity of your own, that you are nobody, you are nothing, you are not a real person ultimately, you are still drowning in an ocean of Mayavad. There's no beginning even to the relationship with God. So the another question, how much you treat yourself, how much you deal with yourself, as if you are real people. How much you have faith in your own existence. This doesn't mean ego. No, I am so incredible, I exist. I mean, to say I exist doesn't mean you are egotistic. To acknowledge your real self is totally humbling. It's not something to be proud of in a mundane way. So how much do we treat not only God as a real person, of course, also, how much God is a real person for us, how much we are as a real person for us. Because Krishna may be just waiting for that to happen. When the real person in us comes, and here I am, Krishna will say, I was waiting. So we know in theory, no? Yes, Supreme Personality, person, I'm a person, we are personalistic, all this word person in our glossary. But how much we are acting out the glossary, how much we are acting out those definitions. So Mayavad can be there. Mayavad is called in our tradition Kaitava Pradhana. And Kaitava Pradhana means the greatest of all cheating, impersonalism. So, and this is not limited to say Soham, Aham Brahmasmi, everything is Brahma. No, this can happen in all the things. So, and that's even worse, because one thing is you officially subscribe to impersonalism and you say, I go for it, I don't care for any person. But what if you promote impersonalism in the guise of personalism? That's the worst form of personalism, of impersonalism. That's Kaitava Pradhan. That's the topmost cheating. To be a card-carrying member of the Gaudiya Sampradaya. Promoting such a detailed personalistic goal, but still, I'm not convinced I'm a person yet. So again, this is not to get tortured, no? You're getting too serious at this point, but of course a serious point, but to just hopefully some shock treatment to become aware of certain aspects that we need to embrace to be members of the Gaudiya Sampradaya. That's not just waving a name or an affiliation, but how much of a person I am. So just to conclude, and with this we are putting the discussion to rest and putting you to rest also after some shock treatment, morning shock treatment. So we have presented some obstacles today that we need to deal with. We have tried to share some ways of dealing with them in a positive way, hopefully non-neurotic, not unsustainable way. But of course, we have to deal with them, as I mentioned. Be careful. Sometimes we may get over-identified with our imperfection, with our obstacles, all the things we mentioned today. We may get over-identified. We need to identify them. But we may get over-identified. And then as a chain reaction, we may be terrified about anyone noticing them. So that's a second problem. Because first you think, I'm that. And that's such a disaster, and I'm that. So I don't want anyone to know about that, because if they realize that, nobody will want to be nearby me for a kilometer or something. And I don't want to be alone. So you start to fake. Now you start to create the whole character, so nobody notices that thing you think you are, but you are actually, you are not that. So there's no need for faking anything. You follow my point? But the problem with these obstacles, that I'm making it clear because I don't want to promote neurosis in any of you. When we are speaking about this, be careful not to be overt identified with them, and from then jumping to the over hiding of them so nobody notices them. There are two extremes: over identification, over hiding. None of them are healthy. So what's the healthy way to deal? Of course, to deal with the counteract these two extremes. Do not be over identified, but also do not be, of course, hypocrite and not seeing anything and put everything below the carpet. Identify them, but be willing to recognize them in a proper mood, in a proper environment, with a positive outlook, with some positive counterpart. Always try to find a positive counterpart. We will speak about more about that in the next class. When we speak about obstacles, or if you will, to negative stuff, if you want to put it like that, how to find the negative side of that coin and always keep a positive outlook. So in our next class, tomorrow we will be addressing the some generally called nama aparat, or famous 10 offenses to the name. I will try to study them in a, if you will, from a noble approach, not so much from the don'ts, what not to do, but what to do. No? And by doing that positively, naturally, the don'ts will, avoiding what not to do, will be included in the equation. But how to focus and absorb ourselves in a positive counterpart, always. So anyhow, that's today's presentation. Sorry, I told you I will extend myself a little bit more. And a little homework, if you will bear with me. Of course, one of them will be, I mean, all the homeworks are similar, basically. One will be while you are chanting today, tomorrow morning, before class, and of course, you can extend that as much as you will. Try to become especially aware of the things we spoke today, these obstacles, because probably they will come. and learning to locate them and to know how to deal with them, especially the ones that you may feel personally, oh, I have to work on these ones specifically, and which are the steps I can take to deal with them in an effective way, in a healthy way. And of course, if you want, you can journalize about that as well, not only being aware of this while chanting, but sometimes to increase that awareness, it helps to put the thing in a written form. And as usual, if you would like to conclude with some prayer of your own authorship, that's also an interesting way to keep becoming an individual. Write your own prayer in connection to that thing you feel you need the most type of mercy to overcome any particular obstacle. So I'll conclude here, and I don't know if there are any questions. I mean, there were some questions in between, but maybe there's some comments, contribution, question before concluding today. Now is the moment for that. Everyone is quite serious, so that was a good class. I'm happy with that. Bhakti Rasa.
I was thinking of the last impersonalism part that's my favorite. So this morning I was thinking of Pinocchio, who, you know, he wanted to be a real boy.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted to be real. Mm. He wanted to have a real personality and have a real relationship and real love. But until he was, he lied about not being a real boy because he didn't know anything else to do. He really wanted that, so he lied about it. And of course it became obvious that he was lying. But I thought that was kind of...
At least it was obvious for us.
Yeah.
not for him. Yeah. Remind me, Jordan Peterson, he always goes on his psychological descriptions to Pinocchio in that particular sense as well. That's one of his favorites. He has a whole series on Pinocchio, basically.
I don't remember the story, but I do really relate to what you're saying. What do you mean he lied about? He claimed he was a real boy. He was a puppet. He was made out of wood. He wasn't really a person. But he wanted to be, he wanted Geppetto to be his father, he wanted to be his son, he wanted to love. But he didn't actually have a personality, a person, a heart. So he lied about it, and every time he lied, his nose grew.
Yeah.
You've never seen Pinocchio? With a long nose?
Yeah, he behaved like if he already accomplished what he wanted while he was not there, and he kind of performed, if you will. So it was, as Lisa said in the first class, I remember, we are not coming here for a performance. No? We want the real thing. But as we can see, no, this has so many layers of things to solve for it to be to what we consider the eternal drama of Lila. For entering that stage, first we have to leave one other stage, another false show, if you will, false performance, and many things imply there to enter the real show, if you will, the real performance in the divine drama of love with God. So, you had.
Just a comment.
Yeah.
But some say fake it till you make it.
Sorry again?
Some people say fake it till you make it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not advocating that.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm just saying there's certain things that you can't get or you don't understand or that are not
mm-hmm.
personal to
mm-hmm.
you. So you go along and you have your Vaishnava friends and,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and people
mm-hmm.
to help you
mm-hmm.
along.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that comes to my mind. This does it like a popular saying in English, right? And my gurus will say, like, imitation of a good thing is a good thing. I will connect with that if we are to take that quote you mentioned is in a healthy way. Not like in the beginning you don't have many clear ideas or something, and you just follow how a person acts with in a naive way, if you will, no, in a healthy way, not like cheating yourself, if you will, but more imitation, like even like a boy, like a baby, you know, it's like imitating, you know, what the adults do. And but at one point that person has to become an individual by themselves. It's not just about doing what your mom, your. So of course there is place for imitation, if you want to call that faking, although the word may have another implication for others. But the problem here is when, again, how to say, you are no longer in kindergarten, you are no longer a boy, you are ready to something else, and you keep denying that, probably unconsciously. And probably there around you there are, and again with this I'm not trying like to create over pressure that it's not enough what you are doing now, I know you are a cheater, I know you are a hypocrite, go more substantial. I'm not saying that. Probably you are doing as much as you can and we applaud that, but probably not. And I'm not the one who tell that to any of you. I'm the one to tell it to me. You are the one to tell it with you. And again, not in a neurotic way, but just to always understand there's so many layers. I mean, I shouldn't be so sure that I'm always doing the right thing. that's a dangerous position. But also I shouldn't be so sure that go to the other extreme either. No, like I'm totally fake and I'm totally hypocrite and I'm nonsense, and you end up over identifying with that, and that's another variety of false ego. Still you are in the center. I am this and I am. It's all about I am, what you are or what you are not. But so yeah, there is place for being in certain environments, learning new things and kind of incorporating them in the beginning. That will be more superficially imitational, gradually it becomes more integrated, more natural. But in the process of doing that, of course, we have to recognize some finer layers of being at certain stage for practice. In some stages, that won't be a concern, and it's okay. You cannot force that on beginners. But at some point, you will need to ask yourself some things deeply, you know? Especially when you feel probably stuck or probably things are not progressing as they are said they could. So to be brave enough and have the courage to ask ourselves some of the things, some of the questions we were sharing today. Again, in a healthy way. No? And sometimes we may need support in the process of that self-inquiry because it may be too much and it may be like, whoa, what's going on here? No? I mean, I'm realizing I have some work to do and it seems like overwhelming. I know I have to do that, but it's overwhelming me a lot. So I feel like I want to run from that, but I know I should run to that, but it's too much for me alone. So then comes the Sangha and the community, the support. But we have to do that ourselves. Nobody can do that for us. But someone else can give us consolation and support and affection. So we do our part, not just, oh, you poor are so beautiful, so I love you. So oh, you just keep there, don't do anything. I love you too much. I will do everything for you. Dad, you are spoiling the person. That's totally dysfunctional. So anyhow, we have to balance all the things always, no? As I always like to say, on one extreme you have neurosis, on the other extreme you have complacency. So we don't have either of those two extremes. We want the middle point, no? Not the impossible thing, not the easy thing. We want the middle point between impossible and easy, which is difficult. That's middle point, that's not an extreme. Okay. I think we have enough dose for today.
Yeah.
So we will conclude here. Srila Gurudev Ki Jai, Mahaprabhu Ki Jai, Sri Harinam Sankirtan Ki Jai, Sri Dauji Gopal Ki Jai, Gaur Bhakta Bind Ki Jai, Gaur Premanam Haribo.